Welcome to AVXL. I'm Patrick Norton.
Hey, and I'm Robert Herron.
We are in terminal pursuit of audiovisual excellence. We don't care if you're in a dorm room or pouring concrete for your multi-billion dollar standalone personal theater. We are aiming to make sure you have the most amazing experience possible. Oh my goodness. This is episode 2.
Yes.
We are just
welcome.
Welcome to everyone. Hopefully you found us. And if you haven't, well, when you find this, listen to it and smile, because we probably sound a lot more better later on as we're figuring out strange and wondrous places to podcast. You may know us from HD Nation, Techzilla, DL.TV, PC Magazine, Tested.com, Herron Fidelity, and oh so many other places. I also do a show called Tech Thing. We love the home theater experience, and we go a lot into it in the first episode of the podcast. So if you want to hear more about what our personal home theaters are like, you should go check that out. But we should probably launch right into what we do best, which later we'll be talking about HBO Now and the challenge of the season premiere of Game of Thrones 5. But we should talk to Mr. Herron about the 2015 televisions we saw at CES that are actually finally available.
That's the cool part.
All of them?
Not all of them, but they're starting to show up in the stores finally. So if you've been watching online looking for good prices or just to see when the new versions arrive of the TVs of last year, there's a good transition point. If you were looking at the 2014 gear going, you know what, I'm waiting for the price to hit rock bottom. Well, a lot of those models are now at the lowest prices they'll ever be. And they're going to soon be replaced with the 2015 models. So
there's this really funny,
kind of an odd transition period right now.
Yeah, I mean, there's a really funny kick in a curve where the cost of an HDTV goes down and down and down and down and down. And then they ship the new TVs, or right before they ship the new TVs, the cost of last year's model goes up, sometimes dramatically.
No, that's so worth paying attention to, though, because as soon as you see it start to tick back up well above what the lowest prices were, don't even consider it at that point. It's becoming a rare quantity, and chances are the new model's out at a similar price. Mm-hmm. So one of the ones I noticed right off the bat was LG's 1080p LCDs. They had a lot of terrific edge-lit designs last year, IPS panel technology, so you get the good viewing angles. But for 2015, the new models are already being discounted, I've noticed, online, which is great. So if you had your eye on something from them last year in the value categories, like their 56, 5900, 6300, those type models, the 2015 models are looking good. And the big improvement really is going to be with the software in the TV itself, their WebOS component.
Oh, dear.
Basically, they're saying that with all of the TVs, if you did buy one of the 2014 TVs that has the WebOS interface, that nice, beautiful tabbed interface, you should be receiving an update sometime here in 2015 that will get you to version 2.0 of that software that the new 2015 models will be equipped with. And initial reports, at least, are saying that the software itself hasn't changed a whole lot. Right. However, performance has increased quite a bit. So that's one benefit right there. If it felt a little laggy, or it does feel a little laggy on your older hardware, your TV from last year, it should get a nice performance boost.
See, this is why I'm so excited. Like, one of the announcements this week, there's a crazy dog pile of announcements this week along with HBO Now debuting, but the Roku 2 and 3 both got bumps. The Roku 2 got a faster processor, but lost the super cool mic with the audio output, which is fantastic if you are in a house where you like to watch movies at 2 in the morning really loud with headphones on. The Roku 3 got a voice search or voice control system added to it. We haven't had a chance to go hands-on with either one of them yet. But so the Roku 2 is now as fast as the Roku 3. The Roku 3 is just as fast as it was, plus has the ability to talk to certs. They added, if you're a Roku user, you're going to scream with joy because they added the ability to search for channels instead of like searching for a category and clicking 275,000 times.
Nice.
Or 1,700 times, as technically there's only like 1,700 or 3,000 channels, you know, half of which are churches, which is nothing wrong with it being churches, but it's just like when you're trying to find, you know, YouTube and you're scrolling through a giant list of things, it gets complicated. I digress because, you know, as far as I'm concerned, an Apple TV should be a new model later this year, won't be 4K, or a Roku 3 is still about 80 times better than the finest experience I've had on the onboard software on any television.
I concur. Generally speaking, unless you have one of the super premium models or a premium television that has a quad core or a beefy processor to handle app performance and to make the whole experience seamless, every device I've ever used, everything from a Chromecast through the Fire TV sticks to, you know, my game console that I'm still using, provides a superior experience for apps in general. And for me, that's it. I'd rather also keep that separate in some ways too. Mm-hmm. So I'm not waiting for something like a nice OS update or something for the TV in order to improve the experience. So,
I mean, it's funny, like the Roku, you know, they're an amazing company in terms of they do a good job supporting older applications. Although I will say, if you've got anything older than a last generation Roku 2, just go buy a Roku 3 or a new Roku 2. Because it's fantastic, but it is unbelievably frustrating in how many television operating systems just kind of orphaned out, sometimes less than 18 months after you purchase the television. So you've got some level of support for Netflix and maybe Pandora and probably some basic video or audio streaming.
Well, yeah, looking too at what's coming up for 2015 mm-hmm. or this year, if you want 4K streaming, mm-hmm. that is going to be an app built into the TV itself.
Period.
Yeah.
Unless you buy that. Or did Sony get rid of the incredibly expensive 4K box?
No, they still have that. And that does still provide just Netflix in 4K as a standalone a standalone component you could add to any 4K TV that has HDCP 2.2 support. But Sony was mentioning that they would add Amazon 4K at some time in the near future, and that still hasn't happened. So, it's about $700, I think, for the FMP X10.
Yeah,
their 4K media player box.
Phenomenal
box, but
$698.
Yeah, it's not cheap, and the cost per content too. There's a bunch of free content that ranges anywhere from 2 minutes to about 20 minutes long, but for premium movies, it's actually the selection's pretty sparse. Rental prices, if you can rent it, some are only purchase. Rental prices are about, I want to say, $8 for 24 hours of viewing.
Right.
And then up to $30-$35 for some that you have to purchase outright. That adds up quick.
I mean, it's funny because there's also the FMP X1, which is another 4K ultra media
Skip.
Player.
I think that was the original one, the round one.
Yeah, that's the one that only works with Sony televisions.
And so did the X10 initially, but Sony did update the firmware on that to now support every TV that has a protected HDMI port.
Okay.
4K TV, I should say. So
this is also a way of saying that there's still not much in the way of 4K content, nor is there a lot of Dolby Atmos content in Blu-ray format. I think the list is up to approximately 12 films.
Oh, good. Okay.
Including John Wick, which means there's now at least two films of Dolby Atmos worth watching. There are Dolby Atmos speakers for in-ceiling application. I'm just jumping all over the place today.
You love your audio, though.
I have issues. Well, it's funny because Dolby Atmos is available, but the speakers are affordable. So we should point out, if you haven't been to a theater in the last few years, which is pretty normal for a lot of our audience, Dolby Atmos is the latest thing, and it's essentially adding height. Our friend Mauricio, I was teasing them because one of the angriest emails I ever got from a friend was when I suggested that surround sound was mostly just throwing noise on the back channels, which led to us interviewing a spectacularly awesome audio engineer that works down in Hollywood, and we had a great conversation about surround sound and what it takes to make good surround sound and what's going on with surround sound in the theater. And it's so funny, Mauricio's really excited about Atmos and DTS:X, which doesn't really seem to exist, but is really kind of out there. And then there's like Aural 3D, which doesn't really exist in the home. But so Dolby Atmos, essentially these are immersive sound in the sense that they're adding height. So Mauricio's like, okay, so instead of like putting a sound around you, I can actually fix it in a 3D location so that the helicopter isn't just coming from right to left, but the helicopter is coming over and down. And it's really kind of wild stuff. But the speakers are affordable. The receivers all start at about $1,900.
Yep.
And you've got like 12 Blu-rays, exactly. One of which is a Transformers disc I wouldn't wish on people I didn't like, much less myself. Although if you are a Transformers fan, I get it because, you know, I've got some unbelievably vicious films in my collection.
You can think about it as well as just simply with the additional speakers, you're not simulating directional audio. You're actually being able to recreate that very accurately. And to recreate that cinematic experience or what you would experience in commercial theaters, that's a pretty cool thing. And when it's set up right with the content that's authored for it, it's going to be phenomenal. And if you're doing something like a room remodel or you have, you know, the budget to, there are a couple ways of doing it. You can either install the speakers in the ceiling or fix them on the ceiling, or you can even have these speakers that are up firing that actually sit on top of your current surround sound speakers and bounce the sound off the ceiling. That can work really well too. Although getting these set up properly, calibrated right,
is a big deal.
And if apparently everyone I've talked to so far, at least, the best setup is if you can actually put them in the ceiling and have them down firing straight at you.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's not for everyone. But going forward, to be able to at least have those wires laying there, mm-hmm. ready to go, and the speakers to be installed at a later date for when you do the AVR upgrade and more content becomes available and it's your thing.
Yeah.
Well, hopefully it's going to be great.
That's one of the things Mauricio said, is he really sees this as an extension of the existing technology, not a dead end or a sort of a, you know, gee whiz flash in the pan.
And all of the AVRs that do support Dolby's experience, that you would think that has the compute power at least to do the Oro 3D or the DTS:X technology as well with a firmware update. Mm-hmm. Some AV receivers will be able to do that, I'm sure, unless the manufacturer is supporting that product through the lifetime of it.
Well, my six-year-old $300 Denon AVR is not going to support it anytime soon.
I don't have enough. I have a 7.2 AV receiver, so that's technically not even enough, even if it could be firmware upgraded. So it's really looking at new hardware. And if you've got the bucks, though, to do the audio for a room and dedicated, there are better experiences this year than there were last year. So
my personal favorite is, I apologize, I can't remember the name of the company, but they are doing a 6-inch integrated woofer into an in-ceiling speaker. So there's a full range speaker in the ceiling. So if you want the fully, if you're watching John Wick and something blows up, it's coming from all directions.
I worry about super strong. It depends how that speaker's mounted. I really worry about an in-ceiling, something that's at least clamped to drywall in terms of a subwoofer. That just doesn't ring for me properly. But
what was that thud? That was the subwoofer blowing itself out of the ceiling. We were talking before I took us on a terrible long loop into the darkness about LG's 2015 televisions.
Totally. And one thing to follow up on with that would be everyone's eye candy favorite would be their OLED TVs. Mm-hmm. And those will all be 4K for 2015, except for the EC9300, which is out now. That will still be offered throughout 2015. The EC9300 being their 55-inch, the original, not their original, but one of their most popular curved OLED televisions, 1080p resolution. The rest, all the new models for 2015 will be 4K. Most of them, actually, they will all feature the OS, WebOS 2.0 upgrade.
Right.
The big deal really with OLED is how dark is black and that ability to create that luscious, just perfect black. In a pitch black room, there is no glow. And in a recent demonstration I saw, like basically a high-end TV shootout between, say, Samsung, LG, Sony, and maybe one other manufacturer, the main differences I was seeing had to do with absolute brightness on the high-end for TVs, peak brightness in particular, and the ability to calibrate these sets accurately. And overall, some of the initial reports are saying that LG's OLEDs are a little difficult to calibrate if you're trying to just go for... If you're trying to perfect the graphs that are coming out of the TV, the response of the TV itself, it turns out that you can get the graphs looking really good, but then you look at the overall image quality and it's just not there. And it's better to basically end up resetting the TV, do some very minor adjustments to it, and kind of leave it alone. Otherwise, you start turning the knobs on any of the new OLEDs too far, and suddenly the image quality just degrades dramatically. Even though your charts and graphs might look good, the overall effect just isn't quite there. And I'm also seeing some banding artifacts and other things too. Granted, these are pretty early in the year yet, and given how there were some issues initially with the EC9300 that came out last year, LG did address those actually, and they provided firmware upgrades that made it a better product in the end. So that's what I'm hoping to see more of as well. Also, basically Samsung's new SUHD TVs. That's the other big news.
Those were so pretty.
They did a good job. This actually features the nanocrystal technology, quantum dots, that basically is expanding the color palette that will apply for their premium JS series. Specifically, though, I had a demonstration last week with the 9500. That'll be their super premium for this year. Mm-hmm. 65 and 88 inch screen sizes. Forget asking me how much the 88 inch costs. I want to say it's over 20,000 initially. And the big deal about the 9500, their top dog, will be that the fact it has a full array backlighting LED system.
Right. Probably the last one they ever make.
I don't know. It's not cost effective. Let me put it that way. But the beauty of that 9500 is its ability to produce literally what they call one of the brightest peak detail brightnesses I've ever seen on a TV in terms of, they're claiming with 1,000 nits. And for comparison purposes, like Vizio's P series television right now, its peak brightness, when I put up a small window or even full screen, that TV can pump out 400 nits. And right. I consider that a pretty bright television. That's at the upper end of what today's TVs are putting out as far as LCDs go. A good TV would put out about 250, 300 nits. 400 is getting pretty darn bright, and that's great for a brightly lit room. But when you can do 1,000 nits of peak bright detail, and now this isn't full screen brightness. This is where you're able to do highlights and what they're calling high dynamic range, where it could be, you know, reflections on the water or in an inky dark space scene, outer space scene, the stars are just brilliantly lit, pinpoints of light or glistening on the soldier's armor. That kind of detail is going to be, it is eye catching, and it is really interesting to look at. And going forward for 2015, Netflix announced that they will be encoding high dynamic range information into their video streams as they're being delivered to what TVs we'll see. I imagine all the Prime players will be involved in that, and it'll probably be a specific feature for 4K TVs in particular, that running the app itself on the TV. And for the new Blu-ray standard coming out later this year, supposedly it will also support this 4K high dynamic range metadata. And that's, for me, one of the big deals. Even though you have all this brightness, and it's going to be on a few formats coming soon. The interesting part is you really need to calibrate the picture, or if you're going to author this content in particular, that becomes one of the big problems. So say I'm in the Hollywood studio and I'm looking at a high-end reference monitor. Could even be an OLED monitor that has perfect black. Right. However, none of these reference monitors they're using to make movies with or edit them can produce 1,000 nits of brightness. Right. So they're almost guesstimating at what it will look like on consumer displays. And Samsung, to their credit or not, you can call this either way you want, they actually ended up supplying editing houses with their 9500s that could do that 1,000 nits of brightness and said, create us some content that's optimized for our particular TV.
Right.
But, you know, it won't look quite right on any other set. And even other JS series models, anything below that 9500 is going to be edge lit LED. And Samsung didn't give specific numbers yet. And this will be one of the first things I'll test. But how bright can those TVs hit? It ain't going to be 1,000 nits. Right. It'll be much less. But still, if you have these different levels of peak brightness, it's going to be very hard to author this content accurately for high dynamic range playback in a consumer environment. So, and how they're going to address this going forward is something I'm kind of scratching my head about.
Well, it mean basically, you know, we can just throw the hot mess label on this right now.
It is totally.
Let's push it out 12 to 18 months when, okay, so maybe this content is going to be delivered online, which eliminates the issues with not having the bits you need inside of a Blu-ray enclosure. Although, you know, we keep hearing strong rumors that there will be a 4K, you know, evolution of Blu-ray in the none too distant future. Although personally, I think most of the studios never want to print another disc for the rest of their lives.
Maybe.
But
please, Panasonic, do it.
Yeah, please.
They're ready to go. It's just a matter of, you know, is the demand there?
Yeah. Well, and I think the demand is way out because, like, you know, I'm looking at these televisions, right? So, the official prices, you know, the JS9500, these are all the SUHD 4K televisions from Samsung. The 65-inch curved, the MSRP, the manufacturer's price, is $6,500. It's selling for on Amazon for $59.97. The 78-inch JS9100 lists for $9. Can't find it for sale
anywhere.
That'd
be the edge-lit one.
Yeah. You know, the 65-inch curved television is $5,000. The 65-inch curved edge-lit television is $5,000. The 55-inch curved television is $4,000. The 48-inch curved television is $3,500. These are MSRPs. The flat 65-inch is $4,000, which is probably a fantastic bargain. compared to the $6,000 curved 65-inch 4K, you're a little more bullish on curved screens than I am at this point.
I see no negative to it overall. Right. If you like how it looks, it's aesthetically pleasing to your eye. The curve is fine. I find that especially if you're sitting in a dimly lit room or even a few minutes in front of one of these TVs, you really kind of forget about if it's a curved screen or not.
Well, it's funny because it's funny how you structured that sentence. It does not detract from the viewing. No. It does not necessarily add anything to the viewing either.
Yeah.
But you know, it's funny. But you're paying an extra, you know, you're paying an extra.
Oh, and you could also take the approach of like LG is doing with their super premium OLED, their largest OLED. I believe it's 77 inches. Instead of building two different models, a curved and a flat screen, they're making one that's actually flexible.
Yeah, well, I guess the 8500 is also edge lit, where the JS9500 is.
That's full array local dimming, just on the 9500. Everything below that will be edge lit local dimming.
Let's call it $1,000 for the curve and $1,000 for the edge lighting, although it's probably $2,000 for the edge lighting, and they'll throw in the curve.
Full
for
array
free.
Local dimming is expensive on any TV, and there aren't that many that do it. But I could go right into Vizio's 2015 TVs that are all full array local dimming. And the E-Series, their most affordable TVs, not the most affordable, but of their full-array local dimming sets, the E-Series is already out, 70-inch screen, $1,400, 1080p resolution there. This will have up to 16 zones of local dimming on the largest screen sizes. That's not a lot, relatively speaking. The more zones you have on a particular screen size,
the more granular your control is over the backlighting. Totally. Ergo, the better you can make that particular pinpoint of star in your space scene pop.
You won't affect other parts of the screen by simply enabling some light in one part of it. Their M series, though, last year, 1080p, this year, it's going to be 4K. And that will also have probably twice as many zones of local dimming as the E-Series does. And the P-Series hasn't been announced yet. And that's the one I'm kind of waiting to see what happens. There was still the reference series from CES's of, 2014? Where they showed off a reference model that could do high dynamic range, expanded color palette. A lot of premium features we're seeing in TVs like, you know, Samsung's JS9500. But... And with no price announcements yet, but I'm curious to see if the reference series will become the new P series, or if the P series goes away and is replaced by something like the R series, so to speak. That'll be interesting to see. But for everyone who's been kind of waiting to see what Vizio's best value TV is, as far as their full array local dimming, that E series is out, and the prices are very similar to what they were for the 2014 models, and it's good to go. So I'm pretty thrilled there. And I like that Vizio sort of just said, you know what? Forget 3D. Mm-hmm. We'll take all of that money we're saving by not supporting that anymore.
Sure.
We'll keep our app environment okay. It's good enough. It supplies all the stuff you want.
Go buy an Apple TV.
Totally.
Go buy a Roku
and for
box,
your
go
for the two 4K apps you care about, Netflix and Amazon, that they're already built into these TVs. Right. So you're good to go.
So, you know, a question we get constantly, and we will address this, and we would actually also love for you to hit us with your questions, ask@avxl.com or @avxl on the Twitters, or facebook.com/avxl if you live the Facebook lifestyle. The question we get is it time? Can I buy 4K UHD or should I wait? Now, for me personally, being the cheap SOB that I am, I will be waiting on 4K until there's a significant amount of content I desperately want to watch. Then I will start entertaining the idea of a 4K projector. And I will say the idea of a 120-inch screen in 4K makes me salivate mildly. But to be honest with you, my 1080p screen at 105, 110 inches is pretty badass.
Projection is awesome.
So you know, I personally, if I have an excellent 1080p television, I am not buying a 4K television yet.
That makes total sense. For me, I always remind people, just forget resolution at this point. Focus more on how you're going to use this TV. Is it going to be for a dark room environment where what will be most important to you will be something like exceptional black levels, where even in an inky dark black room, you look at the letterboxed bars in a movie and you can't tell that from the screen or from the edges of the screen. It just, you just have epic contrast no matter what the room environment. And likewise, if you're in a brightly lit room, you need a TV that can pump out light. Like I mentioned, the Vizio P series, that's just one example of a TV that can do an exceptionally bright picture with a relatively matte finished screen. And one of the advantages of that, again, is just for handling a room with some uncontrollable light in it. We're not talking direct sunlight on your screen, but say you've got a well-lit room and you want that picture to have some punch to it, it's going to require good light output. And then likewise, you don't need that, of course, for a darkly lit room or a dimly lit room. And that's where then black level performance, how dark is black, and the things like full array local dimming or even edge lit local dimming can help a lot in terms of making black look dark instead of a dimly lit gray or you know, a glow coming from the corners. And that is going to be the most important thing. Also, it's something to keep in mind. Basically, all the predictions are indicating that big screen TVs, like 55 inches and larger, mm-hmm. will all go 4K in the next 2-3 years tops.
Right.
So it's just going to happen. But focus again on important things like contrast or brightness, depending on your room environment, and go for the good value there. And don't worry so much about, I have to have 4K right now. There's very mm-hmm. few source devices, short of the streaming apps, like we've been talking right. about this episode. And other than those streaming apps and Sony's wonderful 4K media player, expensive but wonderful, there's really not a lot yet to choose from. Right. We haven't seen 4K Blu-ray yet, hopefully by Christmas.
Hopefully.
Yeah. And unless all the cards are just aligned, or you're into looking at still photography at, you know, and you want to double up on the resolution or quad the resolution, there's very few reasons just to say, okay, this there requires...
There are several 4K games. And that's kind of funny because in some ways
4K PCs.
PC games yeah. are kind of killer apps for this, but there's a staggeringly short list of 4K video games, and you're going to need $1,000 worth of GPUs. GPU or GPUs to
yes.
to feed the pixels to that giant 4K screen. It's funny. I did an article for Tested a couple weeks ago. Tested.com. Good people over there. Go check them out. Talking about and Robert and I were laughing about this earlier. Of the color wheel on my projector broke. I had a 55-inch plasma that I brought into the living room in place of the projector. While
60,
I,
isn't it?
Who knows? 60. 55, 60. Well, doesn't I'll matter. Put it this way, you know, and it's kind of funny. At this point, once you go from like 110 inches down to, you know, 60 inches, you start to realize just how much bigger you can go in a given space. And this is something we tell people all the time. You know,
for 1080p projection, too. Yes. 1080p on both screens, one yes. literally four times bigger than the...
Literally.
Yeah.
And, you know, the 1080, and you might think, well, the pixels must look huge in that projector. They don't.
You really don't see all of the detail in a picture no. until on a 1080p screen mm-hmm. with 1080p content, like a Blu-ray movie, you're not seeing all of that detail unless you're sitting extremely close to the screen
right.
or you're talking an image at least 6 feet wide.
And so, you know, the ratio, you know, depending on who you're talking to, THX says your field of view when you're looking at a screen, an HD screen, should be 40%. You know, SMPTE says 30% is good. That's basically if you draw a line from sort of your nose to the left side of the screen and the right side of the screen and get your protractor out and get your sixth grade on, right? The idea is that as you're sitting in this sweet spot in front of the screen, you know, THX says it should feel sort of 40% of the 360 degrees wrapping around your head, right? SMPTE is about 30% is good. You know, what it basically comes down to is, especially for people who were raised thinking a 37-inch Trinitron was the biggest and most amazing television they'd ever see, and it was stuck 3 feet out from the wall and it weighed 400 pounds. And when you're talking about a 60-inch 1080p screen, you're looking like 10 feet max, 6 to 9 feet. Is ideal. For some people, 6 feet might be pushing it, but I think 8 feet, 7 or 8 feet is a really good sweet spot because it's going to be close enough that you're going to get a kind of a cinematic experience. Because my, like, 110-inch projector on a wall, that's a cinematic experience.
It really is.
Awesome. You know, for the 55 or 60-inch screen I'm looking at now, at the same 10 or 11-foot seating distance, it looks minute. I mean, it's engaging.
Where
the
did
story's
it go?
There. The color's great. I got to say, the biggest thing I was like, wow. The blacks are so much blacker on that plasma. And boy, is that plasma so much brighter. But, you know, I think you're still like, you know, 1.5 to 2.5 times the screen diagonal. Or take your distance from the wall and divide it by 1.5.
That's a good. Take the diagonal of the screen and they generally will say 1.5 to 2.5 times. That diagonal measurement mm-hmm. is how far away you should be sitting from the screen right. itself. That's a good rule of thumb overall. That is also dependent upon the resolution of the content,
mm-hmm.
Your relative eyesight. Likewise, if you're watching standard def on right. a 1080p or a 4K screen, you probably want to sit back a little bit further because it's just not... in order to mask that deficiency right. in the video quality of the source material you're looking at. Likewise, if you're looking at a 4K screen with actual 4K material,
mm-hmm.
it almost draws you closer because of the additional detail that's present. And it's a more window-like environment. And the pixels are actually smaller right. too. But it's about matching that content to the mm-hmm. screen one-to-one that gives you the best viewing experience no matter what size yeah. display you're
Make
dealing
sure
with.
Make sure
the
really. Entire chain from your source to your AVR to your projector or television is actually sent to 1080p, that you're not scaling, any digital keystoning on a projector. There's
without a doubt.
So many places. And, you know, you should always sit down and calibrate your HDTV or your projector or your UHD or your 4K. I think we've just come to the point where we're just calling them televisions again.
I had to turn off overscan on my plasma, though, unfortunately. I turned it off initially. Mm-hmm. And then I spent a whole season watching baseball with the scorecard up in the corner, right, with one particular channel who will remain nameless that doesn't change their graphic or move it around. It ended up burning in the screen. And it turns out, at least with plasma screens, be aware that if you do turn off overscan, that video scaling beyond the border of the screen where you're cropping about 5% of the picture, there's a reason to actually leave that enabled, right, on plasma screens, and that's to enable what they call the pixel orbiting function. So it moves the picture around a little bit. So if you do have a static scorecard in the corner of the screen, it'll at least move a few pixels every couple of minutes in, mm-hmm, order to keep it from just frying an image,
right,
or wearing the pixels unevenly, which is something that happened to me, and I'm still working it out a little bit. So anyway.
So many things to work out. Oh my goodness. So, I got to say at this point, I am kind of obsessed with the John Wick Blu-ray. It is fantastic. It is gorgeous. It is delightful.
I'll check it out.
You should. It's a good old fashioned, sad man, lost wife, and then goes back to being his terrible self he was before his wife. It's awesome. It's a super awesome, indulgent, ass kicking kind of movie, with Keanu Reeves, who just was born to play this character, I think.
I just finished House of Cards season 3. I kind of binged watched all 3 in like the last couple of months. So, fun right, entertainment. You really hope politics isn't that bad, but you're constantly going, this is probably, yeah, it probably is.
Oh my goodness.
U.S. politics sucks.
Oh, we picked up Agent Carter on iTunes, and of course I've been watching The Avengers on iTunes, and it's so funny, I got several episodes behind on The Avengers, on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. I got several episodes behind on Agents, because they did that huge delay over the winter where they like stopped, and you know,
see, that's another reason I delay my watching until there's at least a couple seasons ready to go. Binge.
Yeah, no, I'm definitely into the binge watching, but I got, you know, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. started out slow, and then it got amazing at the end of the first season. And then they did this winter hiatus, and my wife discovered The Good Wife, so she plowed through like 6 seasons of that in a couple months, speaking of binge-watching. I bring all this up because there's another option for streaming, right? We've talked about stuff from Netflix, iTunes, of course, Amazon Instant, Google Play. There's 32,000 ways to watch television online now. The newest one as of this week, a couple days ago, HBO turned the switch on HBO Now, which is very much like HBO Go. And as near as I can tell, not having access to HBO Go, has approximately the same content offerings, which is to say HBO over the internet for $15 a month. Excuse me, $14.95 a month with the first 30-day trial free. If you do not own an iOS device or an iPad, an iPhone, or an Apple TV, you're going to have to wait 3 months because Apple ponied up for an exclusive launch on this. And I was thinking about this. Sling TV's out.
Yep.
A lot of people love Sling TV, except for the people who are trying to watch the semifinals of March Madness.
That's true. Apparently there were some issues with new signups causing basically slowdowns in the performance and hiccups in the streams.
And it's interesting. So
that's frustrating.
Oh, no.
If you're a sports fan.
Yeah. Well, I have a friend of mine who's a profoundly enthusiastic basketball fan, and I can completely see him like driving his car through his house. If his beloved,
Sling TV did report team, though, that they are aware of it, and they said they've made some tweaks to the underlying mechanisms to hopefully prevent that from ever happening again. I'll be curious to see though if they can really make it a seamless streaming experience, even under heavy load situations like a major sports event.
Yeah, or in the case of HBO, the launch of Game of Thrones Season 5, which takes place Sunday night this week. So Game of Thrones Season 5 comes. That's going to be the first big test for HBO Now. I got to say, it's a really nice interface. I wish... It's so funny. Netflix on Roku is about 80 times better than Netflix on Apple TV, unless they updated it, you know, updated it in the last week and I hadn't noticed. The HBO Now application... at first you think there's like not much content because it's all the HBO stuff, then there's movies, and you're sort of doing this sliding sideways menu thing, and then you realize you can search and it gets a lot more interesting. You know, technically it's not a live channel stream, but I don't really watch live channels anymore. So I could really care less if I'm seeing the same thing that I would see if I had the little magazine in the hotel room in Tonopah, Nevada. But it is a really great time to be a cord cutter. This is the first time, I think, in 5 years that I'll be watching a season of Game of Thrones along with the rest of humanity, which is kind of nice. But it will be interesting to see, because I'm pretty sure my wife's going to, as soon as that thing fires up on Sunday night, it's going to be like, put the children to bed. We're watching Game of Thrones. I want to see dragons kill.
Nice. For me, it's MLB.TV and their at-bat app for my mobile device.
Right.
I was in a hotel room last week and I basically had my small screen playing the baseball game and I'm watching the TV in the room on another channel to catch more. I think it was the Warriors game that was on. So I was multitasking my sporting
events. The
Warriors
are leaving the East Bay. They're dead to me.
I will say the MLB TV app, though, they've upgraded it. And the experience I'm noticing on my PlayStation and on my mobile device, the quality has been upgraded. And if you're a baseball fan, that is the single best investment you can make. Although here in the Bay Area, I can't watch, still can't watch local teams without a blackout. But the Unlocator service, I will say, works perfectly, and I am so grateful for those guys for that. So
it's funny you should mention
that. It's worth every dime.
MLB, because MLB Advanced Media built the HBO Now system for HBO. HBO Go is built internally. HBO Now is farmed out to MLB Advanced Media. So, you know, if they can handle, gosh, did they do a blackout on the World Series? How stupid would that be?
However, MLB did claim that they will probably be dropping the whole blackout madness starting next season. And we'll see.
So, well, you know what?
Doesn't matter to me. I'm paying another service to make that go away.
That's pretty funny. But it's you know, you laugh, right? But when you're talking about, you know, the 1970s, I think blackouts make a lot of sense because, oh yeah, by the way, normal families could still afford season tickets for football teams without committing a significant percentage of the family's earnings instead of something, say food or, you know, health insurance. And today, like season tickets, even for, you know, the Raiders, who have some pretty affordable packages geared towards the community, are a prohibitive amount. I don't know. I'll be glad. Not that I watch a lot of baseball or football, but I would like to see the blackouts go away.
Yeah, even with sold out games, apparently the rule is 72 hours in advance. Well, right. Most of the games, at least here in the beginning of the season, are sold out, yet there is still a blackout in place. So, you know, yeah,
dorks.
It needs to go away with a quickness.
What doesn't need to go away is you, ladies and gentlemen. You make this show happen. Do us a favor. If you can review us on iTunes, if you can share the link to AVXL with your friends, go to AVXL.com, get the RSS feed, and please consider supporting the show by contributing to our Patreon campaign, patreon.com/AVXL, where you can actually donate and help bring the program back next week. That's what I'm going to say. If you can pay us, we can make the time and actually pay for the bandwidth to distribute this, and we will answer all of your questions. You may have noticed there's kind of a dearth of viewer questions in this episode of AVXL because you have not started emailing us because we just started it, but do us a favor, email ask@AVXL.com, tweet @AVXL, or post on Facebook.com/AVXL. We want you to be a big part of the show because if you guys aren't listening, we don't need to do all this stuff with the microphones because Robert and I can just hang out. He can drink beer, I can drink coffee, and we can have a movie going in the background or a baseball game without getting a takedown notice on YouTube.
We may have to live stream that.
That would be really, really fun. Guns and home theater with coffee and... Yeah. Mr. Hey, everybody. I'm Patrick Norton.
And I'm Robert Herron.
We'll talk to you next week on AVXL.